off-putting at times, and some of our favorite stories are missing. John doesn't have the parable of the Good Samaritan, or most of the other parables, for that matter. But where the other Gospels have disciples traipsing all over the countryside, going to strangers' houses, healing, preaching, all that good evangelical stuff, in John, the main thing the disciples have to do is abide. Be still. Listen to Jesus. The role model for the disciple in John's gospel is not blustering Peter or hardworking Martha. It's Mary sitting at Jesus' feet. Go and tell just isn't in our DNA. It's sit and listen. No, not entirely. The other thing that Episcopalians in general and St. Philip's in particular are good at is aiding and supporting. We understand how important it is to be signs of God's kingdom in the world, something else that John's gospel emphasizes. We understand what it means to abide, to dwell in our neighborhoods, in our communities, in our local congregation. We call it being a presence. What Jesus says, though, is that we should abide in him, just as he abides in us. So then, what is it, this abiding? We don't use the word abide very often. In fact, the only active use I can dredge up in my memory is from my days in Georgia. Julie might recognize this. It was used in the negative sense, as in, I just can't abide that woman. Said to me privately one day when the church women were having a discussion over the color to paint the nursery. Clearly, abide in that context meant to endure. In this case, something verging on the unendurable. That was not how John used the word. John wrote his gospel at about the time when the synagogue and the church came to a parting of the ways. The Jewish Christians had been expelled from the synagogue, excommunicated. This created a crisis for them because, like all other Jews, they believed that God had promised to dwell, to abide with his people always. By being cut off, cast out, by losing their spiritual home, have they also lost that abiding presence? Sometimes we forget that even though John wrote in Greek and even used language that sounds quite a lot like the Greek philosophers of his time, John was a Jew and wrote his gospel for a community of Jewish Christians. From what we can tell, this community had thought of themselves as Jews. Jews who happened to accept Jesus as God's promised Messiah. Their holy book was what we call the Old Testament. John may have known something about the Greek philosophers. He spoke and wrote Greek, so he was educated, at least to some extent, in Greek culture. But he looked to Moses and the prophets, not Plato and Aristotle, for his wisdom. In the Hebrew scriptures, the word used to describe God's presence with his people means to abide, to dwell with, literally to pitch one's tent. When in the Old Testament God speaks of abiding with his people, it wasn't in a fixed place, a temple, it was a tent. No matter where God's people went, God went with them. God's abiding place moved with them through the wilderness, through the struggles of settlement in a new country, through war and through peace. God's presence abided. Now, Jesus tells his disciples, God will abide in them because he abides in Jesus and Jesus in him. though they may be cast out because they belong to Christ, that very belonging ensures that they will always know God's presence so long as they remain faithful to Christ. Then Jesus uses another metaphor, which also has deep roots in Israel's traditions. Pardon the pun. In the Old Testament, Israel is often referred to as God's vine. Here, Jesus asserts that he is the true vine, and whoever is grafted into him finds life through him. I don't know much about viticulture, but I used to watch my grandfather take care of his roses, and every once in a while he would tell me something. One time, as he was pruning, he showed me that he mustn't prune the rose too much. If he cut it back too far, he wouldn't have the same rose bush at all. That's because the rootstock of the rose bush and the branches can come from two different or even three different kinds of roses. The rootstock is chosen for the type of soil the rose bush will grow in, its resistance to disease and drought, whatever the local conditions might be. And rose gardeners pay very careful attention to their choice of rootstock. But the part we enjoy, the roses, are of course chosen for their beauty, fragrance, color, sometimes their long stems. And I'm told it's similar with grapevines. The rootstock is chosen for its suitability to the soil and climate. The branches grafted in are chosen for their fruitfulness. If you were to take a cutting from branches and stick it in the soil, you would get the fruit you wanted, but the plant might not be strong and vigorous without the strength and vitality of the life given to it by the rootstock. Christ is our rootstock. And if we want to experience the fullness of life, we must abide in Christ. Significant choices lie in St. Philip's near future. As we contemplate, debate, and make those choices, we will use a number of different words. We may speak of St. Philip's surviving. We may want to emphasize maintaining our traditions and our relationships, not to mention our facilities. We may talk about renewing the life of the congregation. We might want to place emphasis on thriving as a place of worship and mission. It is likely we will use all these words in different and appropriate contexts. Here's another word. Abiding. In all our conversations, it is of utmost importance that we remember that our life in Christ is always our priority, that it is from Him that our life derives, and it is only when we abide in Him, in His will, in His love, that we will find our purpose and our life.